Welcome to the
Idiots
Explaining
Entertainment
Extravaganza, only on GamingUncensored.com. D4.
Hey, what is up? Welcome to E4, episode 5 for 2022. I'm Tommy, Jamie sitting over there. How you doing, man?
5 episodes in and we are still the idiots, I can tell you that right now.
This is true, and we will prove that in this show, I promise, at some point. So, this episode of E4 2022 is going to cover a lot of different things, so just prepare yourself right now. We're going to start with...
Before you get to that, I'll tell you, at the end of the show, I'm going to add something to it. I'm going to add... some 4K content that we haven't talked about, but that's at the end of the show. So yeah, it's gonna be a weird show.
We got a lot to get through. So we're gonna start with Square Enix, who had a Final Fantasy VII anniversary event the other day, which included some pretty big news. We'll talk about that. And then we're also going to talk about the future game show in this episode and the Wholesome Direct, which has become a E3 season, which I saw somebody refer to it that way earlier. Seems like a good term. We don't have E3, but this is still kind of E3 season. Has become an E3 season staple over the past couple of years. And so we'll talk about some Wholesome Games, which is a show I really enjoy, even though it's random. And most of the games I'll probably say are not things I'll ever play. I just love that this show exists and the content that comes out of it. And so we've got a bunch of titles we're going to talk about and try to get through, and we probably won't get through them all, and that's okay. Let me mention something here though at the top of the show. Two things. Go by the website for Patreon. We'll talk about that in just a second. But before that, I am going to put up just from this show and from the previous show. I haven't done this yet, but it'll be live by the time this show is live. So if you're listening to this, go by GamingUncensored.com. And there is a page there that is just links to everything we've talked about from the PC game show and future game show and Wholesome Direct. Because we know we're going through lots and lots and lots of titles, and it probably helps to follow along with some trailers, and so you can see what we're talking about without just us trying to explain it poorly. So GamingUncensored.com to do that. And also, big thanks to the Patreon guys, Cabbage, Jose, Narc, Duff, Josh, Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavash, Chad, Zeke, Chris, Brigham, Sam, Andrew, and Luik. Thanks each and every one of you for participating, helping us out. If you want to see us, watch the video version of this podcast, go by GamingUncensored.com and support us on Patreon.
Can I just say that I'm impressed that you're doing web work? Like, you just gotta throw it out there. Like, here's this thing on our website with all these links. And like,
yeah, to be fair, the website had been neglected by me for a month or so, and so this is me getting caught up a little bit and adding some good content, because honestly, almost every one of these is just going to be the Steam page, so you could just go to Steam and type in each one of these games and follow along that way just as easily. But it is really, really helpful to see what we're talking about, not just rely on us to try to, again, halfway describe it poorly. So
and it only took Duff yelling at us
right
to make that happen.
We figured out we had a broken feed, which we didn't realize, and so the episodes got a little wonky last week, and so our apologies for that. But this is, as you know, episode 5, and so if you've missed episodes 1 through 4 or any of those, they all exist. You should be able to find those on your podcast service, whatever that is, Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, lots of other little random ones, or even the website, GamingUncensored.com. You can find all the episodes there as well. So if you have missed any of the episodes, they are all available to you. Just go back and find those. Feel free to catch up.
I have been doing a little math, and I think I have determined that by the time this is over, there's going to be about 18 of these. if it keeps going the way it is now, there's going to be about 18 of these episodes. So just get ready, because I'll tell you what, we've talked about the lack of E3 on the last episode and missing the format that was E3, and I will stick to that. But one thing I will say is there is a lot of content.
Yes, there is. We have been very fortunate with getting some really good content, and there's still rumors of more to come. We haven't had anything confirmed yet for next week, but maybe. Maybe we'll get Sony with another State of Play. Maybe Nintendo decides to do a Nintendo Direct. Both of those things could happen. It would be wonderful when we're together to have one of those things happen. You'd get some more kind of traditional E4 coverage from us when with us in the same room. Either way, you're going to get us. We're going to be talking about something next week when we get together. And so, yeah, just be prepared for that.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I am at my house trying to get things together. My dad is actually really happy at this point because I was talking about things, and he said, because apparently we have communication issues. I don't know what the deal is, but he says to me, "So you feel good enough about next week that I can go somewhere?" And I was like, "Yeah, I thought we had that settled like a month and a half ago." So it will happen. I told him the only way that it wouldn't happen is if you know, we're held up by a cosmic event or something. You are coming to my house, and there will be content.
Yes, those things we know. We are going to play games. We've got a bunch of games to play, and that's going to be probably the bulk of what we do as much as we can. We are going to fire up Elden Ring and at least get a feel for that. Though I got to be honest with you, I don't know that we're going to get really
well, okay,
into it.
I want to make a pact with you, okay? Mm-hmm. Because I know how we are. Okay, I understand. We have Ninja Turtles, we have The Last of Us 2, we have all of this stuff. I understand all of this, but I submit to you that if we want to consider ourselves a serious gaming show 17 years later, almost 18 years later, we have to commit ourselves to sit in front of Elden Ring for at least 5 hours to be legit. Like, we've been talking about that we would spend 20 minutes with it and then probably go play Ninja Turtles. But I'm saying right now, we need to commit right here, right now. Just make up our minds. We're spending 5 hours with Elden Ring while we're together. And that's it. Like, we may play it for a half hour and go, "I really don't like this." at that point, that's when we're just going to have to get some more pizza and more alcohol. Because I think we have to push through and play at least 5 hours.
I will commit that we will put a chunk of time into it. I am not going to go as far as that, insofar as to say I'm not sacrificing Ninja Turtles for it. Ninja Turtles is more important for us to do when we're sitting in a room together than Elden Ring is. We can do Elden Ring remotely. We need to see it together. We need to experience it together, and we will absolutely do that. I've not fired it up yet just because of that reason. We have to start it together. But how far that start gets wholly depends on how much time we have and how much time we're going to dedicate to Ninja Turtles, because that's honestly the thing I care most about at this point, which is ridiculous, but I'm so pumped about Ninja Turtles. It's stupid.
Can we just say, if you didn't know before, that we really are just 12-year-old boys. Like,
we really are.
That's really all there is to it.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, like, I want to be a serious gaming podcast, but really what we are is 12-year-old boys. And all we want to do is play Ninja Turtles. That's it.
That is 100% correct. And that segues well into the Final Fantasy 17 event, because if my math is right, I'm, 38 right now. That would have put me at 13. When Final Fantasy VII came out. So 13-year-old boy is really, really giddy about the fact that we're getting more Final Fantasy VII content 25 years later. So Square Enix had this big event celebrating the 25th anniversary of Final Fantasy VII, which, again, totally makes sense. Revolutionary game, blah, blah, blah. But we also know, hey, we've got, you know, Remake Part 1 sitting out here. We're going to get details on the next part. We officially have the next part of the trilogy, which, first big news there, we now know that it's going to be three parts. We have one part down. The second part is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And so as we know from talking about Final Fantasy VII Remake, and slight spoiler alert here, but I think everybody's probably on the same page if you care at this point about Final Fantasy VII Remake. The game strays, you know, heavily, very significantly from the original, especially when you get to the end. Like, it's a play off of the original. It is not a remake. The term remake in the name actually has a lot different meaning when you play through the game, that it's not a remake of the original game, but it is a remaking of the world that exists in Final Fantasy VII in a whole different way.
Can I say this? That there's all kinds of things that do this. Comic books do this.
For sure.
You have different strands, and what if this happened? I mean, Marvel has an entire series of right. What if, yes. Right? Okay. Which in most situations, I thoroughly and completely despise. Like, I have not watched What If. And I have not really read a lot of the comics that stray from the original story, mainly because I figure Stan wrote it the way Stan wrote it. And you know, I realize there's more guys than Stan, but Stan, and the way I figure Stan wrote it the way he wrote it, and that's it. Like, I'm not really interested in some other guy's take. This... On the other hand, this is a whole different deal.
Yeah. Yep.
And we're about to get into why.
Yeah. Part of it is just that they executed the first part of this so incredibly well. Just I love Final Fantasy VII Remake so much. And this is, I mean, for all intents and purposes, looks like just a continuation. It doesn't look like there's going to be any radical change in how the gameplay works or anything like that. But the story obviously is going to be quite a bit different from where Final Fantasy VII, the original game, kind of picked up, given kind of the end events of what Final Fantasy VII Remake does. At this point, there's no longer any expectation that it is going to follow along with that story. I think that story is going to be relevant to what Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, by the way, the second chapter of this is called Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I think the original Final Fantasy story is going to play a part in what this game is, but it's not the story that is going to follow. We've already thrown that story out the window, essentially, with now kind of altered timelines and other crazy weird stuff that already... Final Fantasy VII was a convoluted and difficult game to follow, especially when you got deeper into the game. It just gets really, really messy with the whole, like, Zack and Cloud thing and on and on. This is taking that to a whole nother level. Like, now we've got Zack existing in maybe an alternate timeline, but there's some kind of cross contamination between these timelines and on and on. And so the expectations of what we're going to get out of it story-wise are up in the air, but I think we're going to thoroughly enjoy it, even if we don't understand it.
So here's the thing. I think, and this trailer that we watched today, which we should have taken the time to do a piece of Patreon content and watch it together.
Right.
Because I watched it twice in about 10 minutes, and then I thought we should have done Patreon content for that. We didn't. We apologize. We suck. I was watching The Wheel of Time, which I'm going to go back to when this is done, and I will talk about that later. Here's the thing. I feel like that when this is over, we're going to look at it and go, that's a really cool thing that they just did. And it really makes you wonder about the previous... about the game that we played when we were 12.
Yeah.
Like, did they think about this?
Yeah.
And whatnot.
Yeah, I can't imagine that this was in their plans, you know. To use a probably not great analogy, but a similar thing. I've been watching Obi-Wan Kenobi on Disney Plus, which I really dig, by the way. I think it's well done and interesting. But it's also, you know, obviously, they weren't planning to tell this story in 2022 when they made A New Hope in 1977. And so there's, you know, some potential issues with canon and how events string together. And they do a really good job of trying to make it work, right? Of trying to explain how this line that Darth Vader says in A New Hope actually still fits, even though we now have this whole new, like, part of the story that never really existed before with Obi-Wan and Darth Vader having this other interaction, you know, 10, 15 years, whatever it is, before the events of A New Hope. And so it's the same thing where you take something that's beloved from a long time ago and you go, let's see if we could keep the story at least pretty much where we had it while adding a ton of content that would have been really important to know originally, but we didn't have originally, you know, and it's a tricky thing to do. And at some point is going to require you to go, okay, yeah, I'm just going to check my, my critical thinking at the door a little bit here, and I'm going to have fun with this.
Which, let's be honest, we've done that with about the last three movies. Okay.
Of course. Yes.
Like, yeah. I mean, the as good as the Disney thing has been for Star Wars, it's not what Lucas would have done, and that's okay because he made $4.05 billion.
Right.
But it's not what he would have done.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, absolutely. But, like, let's not pretend what George Lucas did made a ton of sense either. You know, like, there's all kinds of continuity mess between the prequel series and the original three. You know, like, it's just a mess. Star Wars is a mess. And if you are okay with it being a bit of a mess, like, don't get into it. Like, it's just, it's one of those things. And that's, bringing it back here, Final Fantasy VII Remake, Rebirth, whatever the third one is, it's going to be a little bit of a mess. There's going to be continuity issues. In fact, they're going to lean into the continuity issues. Those are features, not bugs at this point, because it reinforces this alternate timeline kind of view of everything. It's going to be a part of the experience, and you're going to have to at some point go, yeah, okay, that kind of doesn't make sense, but I'm going to go along with it.
Well, and I'm going to do that as long as these pieces, I'm going to use that word because I can't think of another word. As long as these pieces are good.
Yes.
Like if we get part two, Rebirth, and it sucks, I'm going to be like, they made a huge mistake.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about the story. The story, I think they've proven they can tell a story. The thing about these games is there's other huge potential for them to suck in other ways, right? And that's a very fine line that they're walking with the combat and the different things. We're going to talk about Crisis Core in a minute. And I looked at that and I went, maybe, but maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, basically what I'm saying is, one misstep and I reserve the right to go, you know what, this sucks. You know, first part was real good. This is not good.
Yeah, except for, the pushback I would have for that is that they've already established the gameplay in the first one. And so unless they do something drastically different, that sucks, which they could. I'm not putting that past them. But they have a formula in place that should work. Right? Like, to me, it's the story that's the biggest thing they could screw up. Like, they could make it less compelling. It could get too convoluted that you just have no idea what's going on and you lose interest in it. That's my biggest worry with it, is that it just gets to be a big old mess and you go, okay, like, the combat's fun, because it is. The gameplay of Final Fantasy VII Remake's a blast. I love it. And I'm probably going to play it just for that, like, even if the story does get a mess. But I think that's the biggest thing they could do, is just make it a huge mess that you go, this devolved. Like, the payoff of Final Fantasy VII Remake is that you know the story, or at least, you know, the expectation there is that most people that are playing it, a lot of people playing it, have investment into the world of Final Fantasy VII. And so they care enough about the events of the world to know kind of what happened, which makes the payoff at the end that much more impressive. Because if you don't know what happens in Final Fantasy VII, the original game, the end of Final Fantasy VII Remake isn't like mind-blowing. It doesn't matter. No. You know, like it just is what it is. And so you're really banking on the fan base sticking with you through now not having the blueprint that you just break at the end, which is essentially what they did with the first game.
Right. And I, how am I going to put this nicely? I am not. We've talked about before on this show that everybody is doing reboots, remakes, extensions. And I had a phone call from my brother this week. And I love my brother. My brother's a very successful man. I don't talk to my brother a lot. He's busy. But he called me on Saturday or Sunday afternoon. I thought, this is weird. Why is my brother calling me? He's busy. And I answered the phone, and the first thing out of his mouth was, I just walked out of Top Gun Maverick, and that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. And what we came away with was, we hope that they're smart enough to realize that they cannot do another one, because the fact that they managed to do a Top Gun sequel 30 years later is a total and complete fluke, right? Like, it's a total fluke that it's that good, right? Most of the time, I hate this stuff. And the reason that I didn't hate Final Fantasy VII Remake, the first part, was because it was so good. If they manage to get through the next two iterations, whatever the third one's called, and it's good, I'm going to be like, okay, don't touch it. Don't do any more. You guys are great. Let it go.
Yeah.
That's going to be my thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they're already committed, we'll see where it goes from here.
Yes.
On the remake / remaster, because it's technically a remaster, I think, but whatever you want to call it. Final Fantasy VII Crisis Core is getting a remaster called Reunion, so keeping with our re-theme here, which is significant here if you want to follow kind of at least the story that's being built in the new Final Fantasy VII trilogy. Because Final Fantasy VII Crisis Core follows Zack as a soldier and what happens there, and kind of lead up to what happens at the end of Final Fantasy VII Remake, and into Zack is supposed to be dead, but he's not, which is the, right. The kind of like, where do we go from here with that storyline? And so Crisis Core tells that story, which I never played because it was on PSP, right? And so it just wasn't something that we had. And so you mentioned it. It is worth going and seeing the trailer for it. It is not, you know, up to the same standards of what Final Fantasy VII Remake is. So don't expect it to be that. But it looks fine. It looks good for a remaster and for a story that we haven't played. I'm interested in it. I need to see how long it is. I think that's the determining factor to if I give it time. If it's like 40 hours, can't do that. But if it's 20,
well, to me, it's not even really about the look of it that bothers me. It has that. And again, I need to try and figure out a better way to put this. But it's because Final Fantasy is always this way. But I watched that trailer, and my first thought was, holy crap, is this high school? This is super dramatic.
It is cheesy.
Like, Final Fantasy is always super dramatic and cheesy, but this is like way up there, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Yeah, you have to lean into it that it's not a modernized version of the game, that's a remaster of the game, and so it's going to have those dated elements to it. That the voice acting very obviously just isn't to the same quality as what Final Fantasy VII Remake is, or other modern games that you expect what the voice acting. By the way, like even though there's time, the voice acting in Final Fantasy VII Remake is over the top. I thought it was overall really pretty good.
Yeah, they did pretty good, yeah.
And this is going to not be that same quality. Like you just got to come in expecting that. That's going to be just a little bit. It's different. By the way, apparently it's about 20 hours. And so we'll see. I might just go watch
a recap. Come on, man. You got to play that. You can do 20 hours.
You're telling me with every other game that's out there, we're going to dedicate 20 hours to Crisis Core?
See, ladies and gentlemen, I told you at the end of the last show that if you want to give us a bag of money to play games,
we will definitely play Crisis Core then.
We'll take it, okay? This is what I'm telling you. To get this fan to play the games that he needs to play, we need a bag of money because, and here's my thing. Here's the reason why I feel like we have to play. It's kind of like Elden Ring. I feel like we have to play enough of it to figure out if it's really bad. If it's really bad, okay, I'm done.
Right.
But if there's anything redeeming in there, like we have to play it. Because it's this character that we've heard about our whole lives.
Yes.
You know, it's this character in Zack that we've heard about our whole lives. And, like, here's the story. Like, it's like a car wreck. We have to look. It doesn't matter how bad it is. We have to look.
Yeah. It's just a matter of, do we spend 5 hours with it and go, okay, I see what you're doing. I'm going to go YouTube the rest of this and see it in 20 minutes, you know, or do we spend the 20 hours on it, which I don't know. I don't know if they can compel me into playing that whole game. At this point, being it originally came out in 2007, it looks like a game that came out in 2007 in a lot of ways. I mean, updated graphics, but the gameplay and all that kind of stuff is going to be, even the environments and that kind of stuff, you can just see. Like, it's just not, you know, Final Fantasy VII Remake. This is big, epic, beautiful game. This is a remaster, not a remake in the same way. And so you kind of have to temper your expectations because of that. And just with all the other high quality stuff that exists, that's high competition. We haven't finished Final Fantasy VII Intergrade yet, which we got to do that. You know, like, yes, that's more important than playing Crisis Core. You know, like,
yes,
that's,
we do.
By the way, I think next on the list after we get done with Horizon and see where we're at with Elden Ring and maybe bouncing back and forth between Elden Ring and finishing Intergrade, because, man, we got to do that. Because it, by the way, is on PC now and Steam Deck compatible. So if you're one of the few people that has a Steam Deck, you can play Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade on your Steam Deck, which is pretty cool. So there you go.
And you should.
Absolutely. 100%. Release date for Crisis Core is early next year. Release date for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is winter next year, which, you know, says holiday season, but gives you wiggle room to be like, oh, it came out in March of 2024. That was still kind of the winter.
Right.
Which is wise. Give yourself that wiggle room.
There's going to be a lot of that, I think.
Oh, yeah.
There's going to be a lot of, especially with this stuff, because I even think Rebirth said something about winter on it.
Like, that's what I was talking about. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're giving themselves room because they know they have to.
And as we said on the last show, like, any release date you see at this point, just add 6 months to it and don't raise your expectations to a game coming out that's less than 6 months after what their announced release date at this point is, because that's much more likely. And even then, it could be pushed back farther. I will believe that Starfield is coming, you know, first quarter next year or whatever they have announced when I see it. I very easily could see that be a holiday game for next year. Those are the kind of things that happen in the game world all the time. And we shouldn't be surprised by it at this point. Love it or hate it, it is what it is. And so just embrace the fact that release dates are aspirational at best. It is what they are. So there you go. All that said, let's talk about future game show. This was, again, this has become another one of those staples that's relatively new. They've been doing this for a few years now. This year, the actual event was hosted by Doug Cockle and Denise Goh, who are Geralt and Yennefer, respectively, from The Witcher 3, right. Which, you know, last year they had Troy Baker and... Now I'm a blank. No, not Ashley. Laura Bailey, right? Laura Bailey that plays Abby in The Last of Us 2. I believe that's right. And so they've taken to getting video game voice actors to host this show, which I think is brilliant because I think they generally do a good job reading a script. Like, honestly, that's all you're asking them to do. And these are people that do that professionally. And so it is, you know, what it is. They're related to the community. They can read a script. So. But it really, I mean, it was very much like they're sitting in like their living rooms on Zoom, essentially. Like, it wasn't about the presenters. Right. It wasn't a high production thing.
Well, and that was sort of my issue with it, because you were like, you text me, you were like, hey, this is really good. I'm like, eh, it's all right. Like, the games were good. The games were what they were. We got what we've gotten from every other show, except the PC game show. We already talked about what was different about it. And so I wasn't mad about that. But they the thing started and they said hi. And I guess I'm just turning into a snob because I'm like, I've been podcasting for 17 years. We've been podcasting for 17 years. And I know we sound bad, but we don't sound that bad. Like, that was bad.
What do you mean?
Like, I'm talking about, you're talking about them reading the script. At the actual, like, the actual sound of them talking to each other was bad. And I'm going, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a budget thing, and you had to pay them, and, you know, couldn't have the appropriate tech, but it wasn't great. And I know I'm getting nitpicky about audio, but we're audio people. That's what we do.
Yeah.
And I now have good surround sound setups in both places. And so now I'm getting real snobby because I have it in two houses, and I'm getting pickier and pickier the further that I go. And it wasn't great. And you guys will watch it and go, what's he talking about? He's nuts. I realize I'm nuts. I get it. But that right there turned me off of them. Like they were, you were right. They were passable and the games were good. But I was like, yeah, I'm done with this.
Yeah. Honestly, that stuff just doesn't matter that much because the games were good. Right. Like, that's what matters. Yeah. It was about the games. They did fine. They're, you know, whatever. Let's talk about the games because that's what, honestly, is intriguing about it. So we've got a handful of games. Like I said, go by gaminguncensored.com where you'll see a list of these. We likely won't get through them all, but we'll hit a handful of them and talk about some in a little bit more detail. I want to mention specifically American Arcadia, which we've already talked about, but we got more, the most kind of gameplay and that kind of stuff at the future game show of this game. And it's high on my list. This, I talked about Flashback 2 is one of the games I'm really, really pumped about. It's all like these obscure games that I'm really excited about. But American Arcadia is one of those games that I'm really, really excited about. It might suck. There's a good chance that it's not great, but the concept is so cool and the style is so cool that I'm really excited. So what we saw as far as the gameplay goes is that it's going to be a mix of kind of side-scroller platformer thing like we've seen a lot of other games. This has been a style into its own. They call it like 2.5 dimension, right? It's not quite a 3D game, but there's depth to it that you can interact with things that are in the background. And so there's, you know.
Which Mario game was it that did that first?
I know New Super Mario Brothers has done a lot of that. But right. Yeah, there's been a handful that kind of have that thing that has that depth to it. For us, something like Shadow Complex is a good kind of appropriation, or Inside or Limbo are both games that kind of play that same way, and those are all like it's a cool style. Like, it's a fun way to play games. There's a lot of games I really like that have that. Plus, this also has a transition into fully 3D first-person view stuff that it does too, which is what I'm a little more skeptical about. Maybe it'll be really cool. I was talking about like exploring the environment more and some of the puzzle solving you do in that kind of view. I don't know if it's going to translate well. That transition seems really strange, especially for like heavily stylized game like this. But maybe. Maybe it's cool, but if it were all side-scrolling, I'd be really pumped about it. Say, yeah, some of it's in first-person 3D. I'm going, really? That's strange.
Yeah, it's I think any time, because to me, America, what makes American Arcadia different is that it's the first version of like the Truman Show that I've ever seen in a video game. Really, I can't think of anything else that is trying to recreate the Truman Show, but that's essentially what they're doing.
Yes.
And you talked about how fabulous Truman Show was on the last episode or two episodes ago or something. That's what this is.
Yes.
Like it's a game version of the Truman Show, and that's really easy to like screw up.
Yes. Yeah, it's a really compelling concept that could go really poorly really fast. Add on to that the kind of 70s aesthetic, which is cool. We talked about that before, that we both really did kind of the aesthetic of the game. It has a lot of potential to be really cool, and at the end of the day, it could be a really mediocre game. But I hope. I'm really hopeful for this one that it's not bad, right? That it's at least good enough gameplay-wise that the other things carry it to make it a pretty fun experience. So. Another one I'll bring up is the Entropy Center, which is very, very Portal-ish. Portal meets... So what they showed in the kind of game of this is first person. You have a gun. It's not a portal. It's like time manipulation. And what I thought of when I saw this, obviously the Portal reference is the first thing you're going to take from it because it looks so much visually like Portal, gameplay, puzzle solving like Portal. But the time manipulation aspect of it actually reminded me a lot of Braid, that 2D platformer from 10 years ago or whatever it was. That's brilliant. Indie game. Go find it. If you haven't played Braid before, it's just a good good reason to bring up how good of a game that is. But that game is all about time manipulation of like fast forward and rewinding time. And the gun in this game apparently kind of does that. Like you could move a box around and then use the gun on it and make the box like rewind in time and use that for puzzle solving and all that kind of stuff. And it's very, very compelling because we love Portal so much and it feels very much like Portal, but enough different in a different kind of puzzle thing to make it new and not just strictly a Portal clone.
Which was, I think it's really funny that we haven't seen more of these because Portal is so good. Like, and I'm like you, like I watched 10 seconds of it and I was like, oh, Portal. But it's not Portal. It's not. It's different. But that's the first thing I thought. And you watch 2 minutes of it, and you still have that little voice in your brain that's like, somebody else is trying to do Portal.
Yes.
And it's the credit that I give to them is for trying. But again, this has like American Arcadia, this has the potential to suck because it's not Portal.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. You have to be very careful of doing something that is derivative of something so popular, one, and so exquisitely well done, right? Like,
yes.
When we talk about our favorite games of all time, Portal is probably going to be in that conversation. It's not at the top of the list for either one of us, but it's going to be in that conversation. But when you talk about just purely executed games, like the best game execution, like as close to like perfect execution as you can get,
Portal 2, baby.
Yeah, it's hard to argue Portal 2 as being, you know, one of the very, very shortlist games. My favorite game of all time, probably, we haven't done our top 10 in a while. We need to revisit that and do that. But I'm going to say probably the Breath of the Wild is going to be it, right? I love Breath of the Wild, whatever. It is not a perfect game. We talked about the flaws of that game when we played it. There's lots of complaints about it. You can get into some dungeon design, the breakable weapons, on and on. Those aren't things I can say about Portal. I can't point to flaws in Portal 2 like that. Like, Portal 2 is just about as flawless execution of a game as you can get. And trying to do a game in that vein is really ballsy, right? Like, just,
yeah,
it takes a lot of something to try to say, yeah, we're making a Portal-like. Because it's so incredibly, such a high bar. And I wish them well, and the concept looks cool. And so I hope it's really fun.
The other reason that I'm excited about it is Valve's going to take one look at it and go, yeah, this is cool, that's cool, we're going to use that for Portal 3.
Let's hire these guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the, because you know that's going to happen.
For sure.
I'm all for it. Yep. Go right ahead, guys.
100%. By the way, I haven't mentioned released windows on these because most of them, it's the future game show, so don't expect any of these super soon. But the Entropy Center is, at least at this point, scheduled to come out sometime this year. American Arcadia is TBA, so who knows. I'll mention this, so you go by the show notes and see this as well, gamingandcensored.com. They did a bit about games from Ukraine that they highlighted, a bunch of indie games from Ukraine.
Which, thank you, by the way.
Yes.
For somebody doing that.
With really the purpose being, these guys are in a really, really hard place, obviously, just in life right now, and they're still trying to work and develop these games that they've been working on, in part because it's what they love to do, but also in part because this is their livelihood. And so showcasing specifically these games from Ukrainian developers, some of whom have spent time bunkered down in the hallway of their apartment complex because it's too dangerous to be in the actual apartments because windows get blown out, or have been seeking refuge in subway stations or whatever, and yet still working on this stuff. And so the ones that they showed off, there's ones called Puzzles for Clef. There's one called Zero Losses, one called Farlanders, one called This Rain Will Never End, which was the like Noir cat detective, which yes, looked really interesting, which was cool. One called Through the Nightmares, which is, quote, an atmospheric hardcore action platformer. So cool. Sounds terrifying. But yeah. If that's your thing, and probably one of these things is your thing, because it's quite the array of different types of games, consider supporting them, not just for playing a game that's hopefully pretty good, but because these are developers in the community that we love that are obviously in a hard place right now and could use that support.
And the other thing that I got from that is that I think if I were in the situation that they are in, and everybody in the Ukraine is in at this point, I would just say, screw it. I'm going to go do what I have to do. Forget my job. I'm not going to worry about that. I got to stay alive.
Yeah.
And by the end of watching that, you know, we always joke about the fact that we're going to do the show until we die. But by the end of watching that, my thought was specifically of you and I, and the fact that it doesn't matter what happens to us for the rest of our lives, we have no excuse. Like,
right.
we can't, because I brought it up a couple of shows ago about how people say, oh, I don't play games anymore because I got busy and I, you know, family and whatever. I spend all this time with my family and I just, there's no time. And I, after seeing that, my thought was like, this is what we love. And if it's really something that we love, this industry that we love, we have no excuse for stopping for any reason because these people are in the middle of what they're in and they're still working.
Yeah.
And so I really took, I don't know about you, but I really took inspiration from that in that, you know, if you give up on something that you love because you're busy, that's lame.
Right.
Okay. It just is.
Yeah.
And I'd like to get your take on that angle because that's really what I got from that. Like, if bombs are falling around you and you're huddled in a hallway with a laptop working on a game because that's what you do, I got no excuse.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
And I don't begrudge anybody that's in Ukraine that said, screw it, I'm not working. I'm going to go self-preservation. But like, by all means, like, yeah, go do that too. But yeah, a special a place for these guys. And again, consider supporting them in what they're doing for multiple reasons, not just because you want to play their game. But, you know, you can find games you want to play that are going to be good. But also, yes, that these are people that very directly need that support. So mention a couple more from the future game show. There's a ton, even ones that we're not going to get to that are going to be on the website, gamingcensored.com. I want to mention Sunday Gold because it was an interesting looking one. Again, very stylistic, maybe that kind of 70s aesthetic, not exactly the same. It's actually, I think, futuristic, kind of future dystopian. But it's both a point and click, which is from our youth. We talked about FMV games on the last show, yeah, how that was from our youth. Point and click adventure games was also a big thing when we were young. The idea of getting, I remember playing King's Quest.
The Longest Journey, baby.
Longest Journey, so good. Yeah, it's a great, yeah, example too. So this is kind of point and click in that vein, but also turn-based combat, and so it also has that kind of classic RPG turn-based combat that we also love from our childhood, and so it has that kind of nostalgic to it as well, with the addition of this, again, very kind of comic book style, cool kind of, again, 70s-ish aesthetic. It's not exactly, it is futuristic, but it has kind of that same aesthetic that you're kind of seeing with American Arcadia. And is, you know, dark and grim and all those fun things too. It's one of those games that may suck, but looks very cool. And there was a demo for, I don't think the demo is still live, but during Next Fest on Steam, there was a demo for, and so you can actually see some gameplay of it if you want to, that was streamed, just to really get a sense of how it plays. It looks pretty cool. I hope it's good. But again, is one of those that could really deliver a fun experience. We'll be on like a Humble Bundle one day or something like that, that you can probably pick it up in some subscription you already have.
Yeah. The thing about all of these games that I think, at least that I got from all of these games, is there's something unique about all of them.
Yes.
That really got to me. Something like, ooh, that's neat. I think I need to take a look at that.
Yep.
And we'll talk about the Wholesome Game Show in just a second. But the Wholesome Game Show, as good as it was, like, there was a lot of like farming sims,
right,
and whatnot, you know,
which is what,
yeah,
you kind of expect from the Wholesome Games, yeah, show, because those are wholesome. And yes, you're absolutely right. There's a lot of derivative kind of same thing. The next game I want to talk about goes to that same point that you're making there. It feels, you know, in some ways very similar to Sunday Gold. It's called Serial Cleaners, which is just, there's, yeah, there's so much about this that I really dig. That I hope this is a cool game, which takes place in the 90s. So again, kind of period aesthetic and some fun stuff there. And you and I grew up in the 90s. And so I have a particular, yeah, you know, nostalgia for that era. But you're essentially the cleanup crew that comes in and cleans up like the crime scene to help people not get caught, be it you that was committing the whatever happened that there or not. I haven't been clear on that. But the idea is like it's a stealth game that you can't be seen while trying to clean up, you know, the crime scene, hide bodies and clean up blood and all that kind of stuff. It's a unique concept for a game. Like I can't tell you another game that's the idea behind, which makes it really compelling to me.
Two things on this and why it's compelling. I love we don't talk about broadcast TV a lot, but I love the show The Blacklist because it has James Spader in it, which is one of my favorite actors of all time. The dude's fantastic. Anyway, the character that he plays has cleaners because he's essentially a crime boss. And I thought about that. And then the other show that I thought about, which we have to watch at least an episode of while you're here, is Dexter New Blood. Because we're both huge fans of Dexter. I have all 10 episodes on a hard drive in my house that I haven't watched yet.
Nice. I haven't watched it either yet.
I love Dexter.
Yeah.
And so this was this scratches a very specific itch.
Yes. Yeah. That it does. And again, being taking place in the 90s and whatever. It revolves around four different characters, which you're going to play apparently as all four of them. It is a single player game. It doesn't appear to have any multiplayer co-op or anything like that, which for us is all the better. They're kind of telling their story and it ramps up as at the end, like New Year's Eve 1999, I think, is like they're all sitting in a diner talking about the decade that was, and you play back through flashbacks or whatever. I don't know. It's compelling. We will likely pick this
one up. If Prince appears, I'm going to laugh. Instantly get a reward.
Fantastic. Yeah. Would be nothing wrong with that at all. So a couple more from the Future Game Show. I'm going to mention just really quick because I'm intrigued by it because it's one of my favorite TV shows of all time and it's nothing like anything else we've talked about. There's a Mythbusters game coming and I love Mythbusters as a TV show. I for the life of me don't understand how you make it a video game. The trailer that they show, it's kind of like simulator. It's actually called Crazy Experiment Simulator. Now I'm looking at it on stream. And so it has that kind of, you know, like if you've played any of the recent crop of simulator games like Home Remodel Simulator or PC Builder Simulator, which I played a handful of, which is kind of fun. You just put together PCs, which is something I like to do in real life. And so it's kind of entertaining to do it. It's not great, but it's kind of entertaining, right? And I feel like Mythbusters the game is probably going to be that same kind of thing. Like if you like Mythbusters, like if you're into like what that is, you're probably going to play the simulator for 5 hours and go, that was kind of fun. I don't need to play it again. It's not something that's going in my like back catalog of like, yeah, I'm going to come back to that, but kind of fun. It just boggles my mind that there's going to be a Mythbusters game.
You got to be a serious Mythbusters fan to purchase this one.
Yeah.
I'm watching that and I'm like, really? Really? Yeah. Like, It kind of screams money grab is what it kind of screams.
It kind of does, but it hasn't, like Mythbusters as a TV show hasn't existed for like 10 years at this point. Like it's right. Been off the air for a long time. And so if it was closer to the time that it was popular, I was just thinking like it kind of prepping for the show. Like I bet there's people that are listening to us right now that don't really have a clue of what Mythbusters was. And that's right. So sad to me because I adore it. It's one of my favorite all-time TV shows. It's, you know, like for a quote-unquote reality TV show, it's probably my favorite, like, of that kind of genre. Like, I just love Mythbusters because I'm nerdy and, like, I use it for class all the time and that kind of stuff. So anyway, give me a game on it and we'll see what happens. A few more. Arctic Awakening, I'm going to mention because it reminded me so much of Firewatch, except in the Arctic with a drone, which is...
I kind of got Long Dark vibes.
It does. That. It does have that survival-ish thing too. And so the Long Dark, which I really enjoyed, kind of similar there. Planet of Lana, I mentioned this one just because my wife's name is Lana. Yes. So like it's a game I'm looking forward to just basically because of that. We saw it last year and talked about it in just that the sexy sidekick's name is Lana. But this year we actually saw some gameplay and it actually looks pretty compelling and very pretty. Very cool style to it. Side scroller puzzle thing, maybe a little Metroidvania ish. I can't tell just by seeing what we've seen so far, but it has maybe a little bit of that. And then Snufkin, Melody of Moonin Valley. I mentioned only because the music is it's a musical adventure. is how they talk about it. And the music is from Sigur Rós, which is a super, super cool band out of Iceland that's like made their own language that they sing, which is so good. If you're ever needing like cool, like ambient music, Sigur Rós is one of the places I go to pretty often of just like put it on in the background and chill kind of stuff.
So we're going to talk about another music game in a minute. There was one of those in the Wholesome Game Show that like caught my eye, and it's the, again, we're audio professionals. We love music. That's what we do. And if you put it in a game, like, okay, I'm told, like, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, we're the guys that played Parappa the Rapper back in the day. Like, we're those guys. So, yes. Yeah, I'm all about this.
Yes. Which is a good transition into the Wholesome Game Show, because we do need, or the Wholesome Direct, which, again, has become kind of a staple of E3. And they show, you know, the idea of it, as the name implies, is to show games that aren't blood and gore and super dark and all that kind of stuff. There are games here that deal with, you know, sadness and depression, grief, and loss. There's and grief. And
yeah,
it definitely has that stuff to it, but it's also a lot of really optimistic, like, think Stardew Valley. That's why half the games are Stardew Valley derivatives of some capacity. Because yes, that's such a good example of what a wholesome game can be. Like, I have a hard time of thinking of a more wholesome game than what Stardew Valley is. It has combat. You fight bats and like weird little crabs and that kind of stuff in it. But most of it's like, you know, making friends with town folk and planting pumpkins and like that kind of stuff, which is kind of what a lot of these games are. And it's just such a nice breath of fresh air.
And it's so funny. I think the reason this show gets to us, and the reason you're one of the biggest Stardew Valley junkies that I know.
Yeah.
And I have it installed, and I go back to it, you know, here and there. But the reason that I think that particular style gets to us is, if you really think about it, that's not, let me just say, as a whole, that's kind of how we grew up.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of the way it was when we grew up where we grew up.
Yes.
Right? Like, yeah, you walk around town and the people know who you are because we live in small towns and...
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody goes to the coffee shop and whatever, you know, like that's how we actually grew up. And
everybody's business is everybody's business. Everybody knows every little thing. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, very Stardew Valley-ish. I think there definitely is that component too. And if you didn't grow up in that way, then there's something that's cool and like a peek through the curtain to somebody else's life. You know, like it kind of works in either way. Like if that's your background, then you connect. If it's not your background, it's kind of a cool connection to a different background, which is also powerful, which kind of makes it, you know, this big mass appeal thing. Yeah. So that said, we'll get to a couple of those and a couple others. A lot of kind of puzzle type games in here, though, which we really enjoy. And so one is Paper Trail, just really, really cool. Go ahead. I'll let you talk about this one a little bit.
I was just going to mention, this is the one, like, I for a good chunk of this show, I was trying not to fall asleep.
Right.
And about every 20 minutes or so, I would see a game, and Paper Trail was the first one that I saw that I was like, crap, I got to write that down.
Yeah.
That's really good. It's different. It looks cool. It, like, I can't tell you what's cool about it. It's just, you know, another thing from our childhood. I don't know if you did this when you were growing up, but when I was in the fourth grade, you were really cool if you could take a magazine, any magazine, and trace a picture out of that magazine. And like, I knew kids that they would spend an entire day working on something, and they'd show it to you, and they'd be like, yeah, I just traced that out of this magazine right here.
Right.
And I'm like, dude, that's the most awesome waste of time ever, you know? And Paper Trail kind of gave me that vibe of, again, kind of the way we grew up wasting time in school, you know?
Yeah, 100% we did that. And the other thing we did a whole lot of was like paper airplanes and origami, right?
Yes.
Like just folding up paper and making it today. Remember, we grew up in a time when we didn't have cell phones to like pull out.
Or internet.
Or internet for a chunk of that time. And so folding paper was super entertaining. And so this is like, you solve puzzles in this game by like folding pages and having your character navigate the world by like manipulating this kind of 2D paper world, or it's more kind of magazine vibe that is like paper drawing or whatever. You got to see it. Go by gaminguncensored.com. See it there. Cause it is really, really cool looking.
It is really cool looking. And there's one other one that was at the very end of the show. We can put it wherever you want to, cause I can't remember the name of it, but all I know about it is the lady said that it was totally hand-drawn.
Yeah,
I cannot remember the name of it. If you can find it, I would love to talk about that because that was really cool.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what that one is too. I'll look through and see if it pops up because I know what you're talking about. I had that same thought going through it. There was a couple of witch ones. Is witch like a thing?
Yeah, witches are a big deal this year.
Like we've got space horror and witches are like the things that witches. So there was Garden Witch Life, which is like Stardew Valley with the witch. And then there was Mika and the Witch's Mountain, which is like package delivery as a witch. And it's like, I don't know, like I guess wholesome witches. Okay.
I was like, hey, look, it's Lake.
Yes.
With the witch.
On a broomstick. Like it's very bizarre, but nice and wholesome. There was Gaucho in the Grassland. I actually really dig how this one looks.
Yeah.
I think this one looks very cool.
What got me about it, like I was like, cool, cool, cool. And then they showed the bit with the guy on the horse trying to rope the longhorn or whatever it was. And I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's cool.
But again, it's kind of our world. Like the premise here is like you go back to rebuild your family's childhood or the ranch that they had when you were a kid. And like, it's very, you know, like cartoony, but it's 3D. It's very, very Stardew Valley-ish. And of a bunch of Stardew Valley-ish games, this one to me looks like the most intriguing because it's the most familiar to me. Like it's just like this is kind of the world that we live in, and so it has that that thing that makes it interesting to us. Maybe not to other people as much, but definitely to us because we grew up in that world, and we've talked about that a lot. So, let's see what else here. Just really quickly, I'll mention the Audata. I'm not even sure how you say Audata. I think it's a city builder ish, but it's the one that's very, very musical. The machines make noise when you put them together. There's all these like little houses that all have their own tones. So they're like building musical scores while you're building the city or whatever you're doing in this game. It's very stylistic. Again, it's very kind of simple, reminds me of a game from like our childhood, but more colorful with music. And that just seems like the most chill experience. This is something I want on my phone. Like that seems to be like the perfect mobile game of like sitting in a busy airport, which is just like a depressing place to be, generally speaking. Like airports just aren't like life-giving places. And I spend enough time in an airport to like having a escape. And this feels like just one of those pure escapism kind of games that you just lose yourself in.
If you want to be happy walking through an airport, and we have to try this before we die. Because if you want to be happy walking through an airport, the last time I was in an airport, you were in an airport last week.
Yes.
I have not been in an airport since I've been one time or twice since then picking somebody up. But I have not been in an airport since you and I went to Philadelphia, and I was deathly afraid about that trip. Like, and my parents were afraid right up until the night before. My dad was like, I think you need to let me or your mom go with you. And I was like, nope, we're not doing that. But I really was kind of scared. And then you get out of Amarillo, which is a very small airport, and you get to Dallas, and then you get to Philadelphia. And, like, walking through an airport with me and our buddy Jeff actually brought this up. It's like walking through Disneyland.
Yeah.
Because the sea's like parked. Like, he's like, nobody stops you. Nobody says anything. It's like you're Darth Vader. And you're just like, and so really, if you want a completely different experience in an airport, you and I need to walk through an airport together, because it really is a different experience.
Yeah.
Like, there's people that are like, sir, what can I do for you? We want you to have a great experience. And I'm like, yep, nice to be crippled.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's not something that happens to the rest of us, for sure. Yeah. It is a different experience. So, but that's vastly, that'd make for an interesting game. We just need, like, a cripple guy through, like, different social situations.
Yes.
As a video game would be fun.
You know, we could probably spend an hour talking about what people don't realize and how it changes your whole social. Because, like, you walk around on a daily basis and are around more people than I ever will be. But when you're with me, it totally changes.
For sure.
And I know it totally changes, and you know it totally changes. I don't think anybody else really realizes that, and you don't unless you know somebody that is in this situation. You're right. That would make the most awesome game or reality show.
Yes, it would be vastly entertaining, something we got to consider. So really quick, I'll mention just a few more here, but go by the show notes, gamingandcensor.com, to see some more games that we didn't get to. How to Say Goodbye, I wanted to bring this one up because it goes right to what we were talking about at the beginning of talking about Wholesome Direct, is that some of these games are heavy. They could still be wholesome and heavy. And this is one, it's a puzzle game that's about grief and how to kind of find closure in death. And it's about a group of ghosts that are kind of like helping resolve like what happened when somebody died. And it's just a fascinating concept. It is very pretty. Again, it has that hand-drawn kind of feel to it. I don't think it's the one that they were talking about being hand-drawn.
No.
But it has that kind of style to it. But the concept of the game is just something that's important, that's worth making a game about, and especially, you know, like if you're thinking about a kid that's trying to deal with grief, like having a resource like this that could be something that just helps them process is super valuable.
By the way, since we're talking about this, I think it's a fabulous segue, because the commercial happened about around this point in the stream, and it was a commercial for a gamer and online like help hotline. Like,
yeah,
if you just need somebody to talk to about what's going on online or what's going on in your life, give us a call. And I was like, wait, what? Like, I literally stopped, and I should have written down the number, because I was like, that's a really cool idea. I mean, even for guys like us, we have great lives, we have great families, we have all of that stuff, but we don't have the friends that we used to have, and I have found myself realizing that, you know, pretty much the only person that I talk to about stuff is you. You have your wife, and so that helps.
Yeah.
But like, we don't have a lot of friends, and I'm okay with that. That happens when you get older.
Yeah.
But like, that's what really caught me about this was I was like, this is a really cool idea and something I would actually potentially use. And both of us could use because we're online a lot. We deal with a lot of online stuff. And I thought that was really cool, and I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, I totally agree. Mental health is health care. Like, it's an important thing, and like, don't be ashamed to go talk to somebody when you need to talk to somebody. That's great. I 100% agree there. Let me mention, let's see here. I'll pick one or two more. I want to get to the last Clockwinder because it's a VR game and we love VR. This VR puzzle game where you create clones and then you like have your clones do specific jobs to create like these big like mechanisms, kind of Rube Goldberg kind of processing it, that looks like, right, of having things work, which again, back to our childhood, what was that game called? It was something about contraptions, the Incredible Machine. Was that it? Maybe. I remember a puzzle game from when we were young that had like, you know, like basketballs and bowling balls and springs and ramps and all that stuff. And you had to build Rube Goldberg devices.
There was a couple of those. There was that one. I can't remember the name of it, but there was also Mousetrap.
Mousetrap too. Yes.
Mousetrap was another one that yeah.
Yeah. Similar kind of feel to it. This is kind of that in a different kind of like style in VR, but a cool idea of like, you do the motions in VR to set up like what your clone is going to do. And then you move to the next station and set what the next thing is. And then you make another clone and move on and create these big kind of intricate worlds of doing tasks, which is a pretty cool concept in VR. And again, really leans into what VR does well, what that format is. I'm always excited when I see a VR game that's not a shooter, right? Like, shooters make sense in VR. Like, they work well for a lot of stuff, and I dig them, and we've had a lot of fun playing shooters in VR. But there are other really cool things. Like, this game doesn't really make sense not in VR, but in VR sounds super cool.
To give you an idea, it's very much on the same level as Moss.
Yes.
It's not Moss, but it's that same type of execution type deal, which I really love.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. And there's a sequel to Moss that we got to play at some point. And maybe we do a little VR gaming. I don't know. We're going to run out of time real quick.
And all of a sudden, I don't know if you can see in the background, but I have entirely too much furniture in my house.
Yes.
All this furniture just appeared, which is fabulous because it makes this show sound better. But I don't know where we're going to do VR or when we're going to do VR. And hey, we have a little girl.
Can you say hi?
Hi.
You're just going to turn up the volume on your own now?
What are you doing, little girl?
What are you doing? Have you played any games recently?
Did I?
No, you really haven't. We need to play some games sometime, don't we?
Like Horizon,
yes, we can play Horizon sometime.
Yeah, Horizon be good. I haven't seen you swim in quite a while. It'd be good if you play Horizon.
That's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I know.
That's a game we may have to play together too.
I watched that.
You watched that? Mm-hmm.
That's a game or a TV show from our childhood, from when me and Uncle Jamie were young.
Yeah. And it's still out there.
It's still out there, and it's going to be great. So,
I just want to mention, we got to wrap this up, but there's one more music game in there that was close to the end. That it's along the same veins of the other ones that we talked about, but it was really cool. Very, very, very chill. And I can't remember the name of it. It started with an M.
Yeah. Was it
Mella something? Mella.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
And now she has her own microphone.
Yes,
I love it. But,
she found her own microphone. But
it will be on the website page. You need to check it out. Really cool.
Yes.
We got to get out of here before she breaks stuff in her in his office.
Grabbing bottles and banging them together at this point.
Y'all know where all the stuff is. Y'all know how to get in touch with us. Please get in touch with us. If we missed anything, gaminguncensored@gmail.com. Other than that, I think that's it. That's Tommy and Genevieve. I'm Jamie Jordan. You've been watching Idiots Explaining Entertainment only on gaminguncensored.com, and we are out. Is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.